Today's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. Fire officials say wildfires raging in Los Angeles have killed at least five people and injured many more. Reuters correspondent Jillian Kitchener reports.
Fast-moving wildfires are raging out of control in Los Angeles, destroying hundreds of homes and businesses. Tens of thousands of people have been ordered to evacuate, including celebrities. And on Wednesday, the wildfires turned deadly. Fierce winds were hurting firefighting efforts and fueling the flames, which have grown since they began on Tuesday. Officials said the winds have made it impossible to offer aerial support for the firefighting mission.
Reuters correspondent Jillian Kitchener. Israel's military says troops have recovered the body of a hostage from Gaza, possibly alongside his son's remains. AP correspondent Donna Warder reports.
Hostage Yosef Al-Zayadny was believed to still be alive, but Israeli soldiers recovered the body of the 53-year-old man Wednesday in an underground tunnel in southern Gaza. Another set of remains could be those of his 23-year-old son Hamza, one of three of Al-Zayadny's children who were taken hostage when Hamas-led militants stormed into southern Israel, killing 1,200 people. Al-Zayadny was one of Israel's Palestinian minority who have Israeli citizenship. The mayor of the town where Al-Zayadny lived, Talal Al-Karnawi, explained that Yosef and Hamza Al-Zayadny's names were on a list of hostages still alive and that they had expected to bring them back. The Israeli military says it found evidence suggesting that Hamza may have died in captivity. The discovery comes as Israel and Hamas are considering a ceasefire deal. I'm Donna Warder.
This is VOA News. Two U.S. officials say the United States is set to give Ukraine another $500 million in weapons as President Joe Biden's administration nears an end. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
The goal is to get Kyiv in a stronger negotiating position for potential talks with Russia before Donald Trump takes office.
And President Trump could get the strongest possible deal.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken, hours before Pentagon counterpart Lloyd Austin's expected to announce the package in Germany. The weapons would come straight from the military's existing stocks, and a defense official says the aim is to get them into Ukraine by month's end. There's now a bit less than $4 billion left of the money Congress has authorized for Ukraine aid. Much will likely roll over to the Trump administration, which will decide whether to keep giving Kyiv weapons. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Donald Trump has asked the U.S. Supreme Court to intervene just days before the president-elect is said to be sentenced for his conviction stemming from hush money paid to a porn star. Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner reports.
In a filing made public on Wednesday, Trump's lawyers asked the high court to immediately order a stay in the case, as Trump seeks an appeal to resolve questions of presidential immunity. Trump, who won another term in the White House and is set to take office January 20th, was convicted on 34 felony counts by a New York jury for illegally hiding payments to adult film actor Stormy Daniels, meant to buy her silence about what she says was a sexual encounter with the former reality TV star. Trump has denied the encounter and any wrongdoing. The hush money case made Trump the first U.S. president, sitting or former, to be charged with a crime, and also the first to be convicted. Since the verdict, his lawyers have made two unsuccessful attempts to have the case tossed.
Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner. Former President Jimmy Carter lay in state Wednesday in the heart of the U.S. Capitol building. A state funeral Thursday will bring all of his living successors together under one roof to mourn him. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Washington.
Jimmy Carter died in late December at age 100, after nearly 2 years in hospice care in Georgia. President Joe Biden will deliver the eulogy for his fellow Democrat.
We may never see his like again. We'd all do well to try to be a little more like Jimmy Carter.
Thursday's funeral includes Biden and all living presidents, including his predecessor and successor, Donald Trump. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, January 9th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The state funeral of former President Jimmy Carter will take place today, Thursday, in Washington, D.C.
He was just a real moral person, and he taught Sunday school. I did, too. But I think the fact that he cared about all people, that he was a people's president.
Nigeria and Liberia remember the late President Jimmy Carter. Analysts weigh in ahead of the exit deadline for three ECOWAS member states. Analysts say Burkina Faso's amnesty law is a risky decision. Anti-M23 rebel protests take place in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo.
The demonstration was their way to show their attachment and support to the FRDC, the DRC armed forces, which are fighting against M23 and Tsvangirai in North and South Kivu.
Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Former President Jimmy Carter lies in state Wednesday in the heart of the U.S. Capitol. A pump-filled state funeral on Thursday will bring all of his living successors together under one roof to mourn him. Viewer's Anita Powell reports from Washington with Mikhailo Komandovsky in the U.S. Capitol building.
Paying their last respects to the 39th president in the heart of American democracy. Jimmy Carter died in late December at age 100, after nearly 2 years in hospice care in Georgia. Since then, his final journey has taken his remains over the skinny roads of his humble hometown of Plains to the state capital, Atlanta, and through the skies to Washington for his state funeral. And here to rest in state at the Capitol, where earlier in the week, Vice President Kamala Harris certified the victory for the next president. At the Capitol, representatives told VOA what Carter meant to them. Representative Alma Adams is a North Carolina Democrat.
I have always admired not only his courage, but he was just a real moral person. And he taught Sunday school. I did, too. But I think the fact that he cared about all people, that he was a people's president.
Representative Ralph Norman is a South Carolina Republican.
President Carter was a good man. President Carter was a man who served his country. He loved America. I didn't agree with all of his policies, but you couldn't agree with his patriotism. You couldn't disagree with his... he just loved the country.
President Joe Biden will deliver the eulogy for his fellow Democrat.
We may never see his like again. We'd all do well to try to be a little more like Jimmy Carter.
I, Jimmy Carter, do solemnly swear.
Analysts say the two have a few things in common. Bill Galston is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution.
Carter turned out to be a one-term president, and Biden turned out to be a one-term president. And that's never a reflection of the right combination of politics and policy. You know, in both cases, I would say that the two presidents put the policy ahead of the politics, and they paid the price for that.
Thursday's funeral includes Biden and all living presidents, including his predecessor and successor, Donald Trump. When asked what Carter and the next and previous president have in common, Galston paused.
I don't even know how to begin to answer that question. The two are polar opposites in every respect that I can think of, except one. And that is, they both attained the presidency as outsiders.
And now, here lies this outsider, decades after his presidency ended, inside his nation's most venerated space. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
Nigerian head of state Yakubu Gowon says the world has lost a leader who led a decades-long campaign against disease, especially guinea worm. General Gowon said Nigeria's success in eradicating the waterborne parasite would not have been possible without the support and commitment of former President Jimmy Carter. The former Nigerian head of state spoke in an interview with VOA's Hausa service following a news conference in honor of the late U.S. president.
He did what he did in ensuring, in trying to deal with various human problems, not only Africa and not only Nigeria, but throughout the world too, to deal with certain things that really troubled ordinary people. And he did his best to deal with them. And that's how he invited me to join him, to fight this disease called Guinea worm in Nigeria, when we have, over 650,000, at that time in about 1998. That is how, it was when he asked me to join him to deal with that particular problem. Honestly, I didn't think much of it to start off with. I said, well, let me just do it. But when I went and saw the suffering of the ordinary people, children, the young people, old people, boys, girls, etc., and this disease, the way it affects people, my goodness, it is frightening, and to see the pain they were in. One good thing, I've tried to find out, was there any report of any death, from Guinea worm? This is something that I think had to be acknowledged. Now, I haven't. If anybody had seen that, let me know, so that at least, I'll say Guinea worm is not only bad, but it's evil. Evil causes the death of, the ordinary man or woman. So, I was, very happy that working with him and with his team, and sometimes even himself physically in Nigeria, were able to care the country of Guinea worm.
Yakubu Gowon, remembering former U.S. President Jimmy Carter in an interview with viewers House at Service. This testing role of former President Jimmy Carter will take place today, Thursday, at the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. The 39th President of the United States died December 29, 2024, at the age of 100. His body has been lying in state at the Capitol building. Among his foreign travels, Carter visited Liberia and Nigeria in 1978. Liberian journalist, former diplomat, and author Gabriel Williams has written an article remembering the late U.S. president in the affairs of Liberia. He tells me that Jimmy Carter's life was one of service to the cause of humanity and ensuring democratic governance around the world, including Liberia.
I think individually and collectively, I would suggest or recommend that President Carter should be remembered through dual lenses. First, as a global statesman who greatly impacted the world, being the 39th President of the United States, and after that, founding the Carter Center that became a global institution promoting conflict resolutions, democratic governance, and the rule of law around the world. And then, secondly, President Carter's impact on my country, Liberia, his involvement during his presidency when he visited Liberia, first to Nigeria, and he visited Liberia on the last leg of his trip, making Liberia and Nigeria the first country to be visited by a sitting American president of sub-Saharan Africa. And following that, the Civil War and President Carter's very active involvement during the course of the war.
Gabriel, then tell us about the former president's involvement in the effort to mediate the Liberian Civil War.
First of all, Jim, it's important for historical reflection that it was during the Carter administration that the 1980 coup took place in Liberia, during which President Talbot, William Arrow Talbot, who was then also the sitting chairman of the then Organization of African Unity, OAU, was assassinated by then Master Sergeant Samuel Doe and a group of soldiers. Fast forward to the Civil War, in 1991, President Carter, through the Carter Center, decided to be actively involved in seeking an end to the crisis. During that time, I was a leader of the Press Union of Liberia, and I was among several civil society organization representatives who met with President Carter, who also met with then interim President Amos Sawyer, who was president of the interim government of national unity. He met with them, and then he also left Monrovia and went to Bangor to meet with Mr. Charles Taylor, leader of the National Patriotic Front of Liberia, that launched a civil war in December 2029 in an attempt to remove Mr. Samuel Doe from power.
You mentioned President Carter and the Carter Center. I understand that there's still a Carter Center presently in Liberia. Mm-hmm. How would you describe the kind of work that the center is doing?
I think they've been doing very well. The Carter Center, along with the National Democratic Institute for International Affairs, NDI, based in Washington, D.C., operated offices in Monrovia during that time, during the 2005 elections. President Carter, along with then-President Nisifo Soglo, former chair of the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, they were the co-leaders of the International Observation Mission, jointly mounted by NDI and Carter Center to oversee that election process. And that election brought about the historic election of Madam Ellen Johnson Sirleaf as Liberia and Africa's first democratically elected president. So President Carter and the Carter Center have been constructively involved in sustaining Liberia's nation's democracy.
Gabriel Williams is a Liberian journalist, a former diplomat and author. He was speaking with me from Sacramento, California. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, January 9th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Three members of ECOWAS, Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger, are due to officially exit the West African regional bloc of the nations this month, 1 year after announcing their withdrawal. The bloc, chaired by Nigeria's President Bola Tinubu, hopes to convince them to remain. However, some analysts say growing anti-French sentiment in the region and Nigeria's own recent dealings with France could frustrate negotiations. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
As the departure date for Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso approaches, there's uncertainty about ECOWAS's final efforts to keep them in the bloc. In December, ECOWAS announced a six-month grace period for the countries after a summit in the Nigerian capital to dissuade them from leaving the bloc. But analysts say Nigeria's leadership role at the regional bloc and recent issues with France could make matters complicated if not handled carefully. Aminu Hayatu is a political science researcher at Bayero University in the Nigerian city of Kano.
Nigeria, being at the center there in terms of leadership of the ECOWAS, is really in a dilemma. Because at one point it has to be able to, prove to France that it is ready to diplomatically relate with France. And this is very, very, very implicating, for Nigeria, because it has to do it in such a way that it doesn't hurt the leadership of position which it is occupying in the ECOWAS.
Resentment over the presence of French military forces has grown across West and Central Africa in recent years and soared again recently when French President Emmanuel Macron said some African leaders showed, quote, ingratitude towards French efforts to help fight jihadist insurgencies. Nigerian President Bola Tinubu is also the chair of ECOWAS. In late November, he made a three-day visit to France in search of investment opportunities for Nigeria. Some analysts say that visit could be misinterpreted and cause the hunters to be more resistant to the regional bloc. In a Christmas Day interview, Niger's military leader, General Abdourahamane Chiani, accused France of supporting militant groups in the Lake Chad region to undermine Niger's security, allegedly with Nigeria's knowledge. Nigeria has dismissed the allegations as baseless and false. Hayatu is worried about the trend.
It is really of great deal of concern, and that might exacerbate the tension, the already simmering tension in terms of the diplomatic relations between Nigeria and these countries. It could only escalate things, the bitterness, if Nigeria really doesn't trade carefully in the way that it is romancing the French regime in this very, very volatile situation that many of these countries are in.
But political affairs analyst Chris Quagga says this.
All member states of ECOWAS are sovereign entities. Nigeria has the right to go into diplomatic relations with any other country, as long as such relationships are not designed to undermine the sovereignty of any other countries. No country should define and decide for Nigeria who the friends and enemies of Nigeria should be.
Niger, Mali, and Burkina Faso are all countries where military officers seized power in recent years in the midst of jihadist insurgencies. The countries formed an alliance last year and accused ECOWAS of pandering to foreign influence while failing to secure member states' security. Rotimi Olawale, an Abuja-based political affairs analyst, says the Sahel states cannot survive long without their neighbors.
Right now, they have strong support in their country. They would ride on that support. But I anticipate that as economic challenges pile up, insecurity is very high, and citizens will demand real solutions to local problems soon. And with that, they need a lot of support from external stakeholders, including ECOWAS.
As of now, Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso are expected to officially leave ECOWAS on January the 29th. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Thousands of people in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, the DRC, demonstrated Wednesday against the military advances made by M23 rebels. Reporter Al-Katanti Sabiti Jaffa in the eastern DRC city of Goma tells me that the protesters also condemned the unlawful extraction of gold and other minerals.
This demonstration was their way to show their attachment and support to the FRDC, the DRC armed forces, which are fighting against M23 and Rwanda in North and South Kivu. Thousands of people were in streets marching, singing their attachment to the FRDC and accusing Rwanda for supporting M23 and Rwanda and killing the Congolese citizen in DRC.
What is the latest now in the front lines of the conflict after the M23 announced the fall of the city of Masisi over the weekend?
In North Kivu province, the M23 lost some villages recovered by FRDC, such as Masisi Center, which was under the M23 control since last weekend, and today passed in the control of FRDC. Ngungu, which was under M23 control since 1 year, passed today on the control of FRDC. There was fighting today in different front line in Rutshuru, Lubero, and Masisi, and the FRDC announced to be the one who controls the situation on these all fighting zones.
Jaffa, what can you tell us about the arrest of Chinese citizens in Bukavu?
Authorities in the South Kivu province arrested three Chinese citizens working in the illegal gold mining in the territory of Mwenga. At the time of their arrestation, these Chinese had 12 gold bars and a net amount of $800,000. And this is not the first time that Chinese citizens have been arrested in the illegal exploitation of mineral in this province. This situation pushed people to be angry because the area of origin of this gold are the most underdeveloped area in this mineral province, and the mineral doesn't profit to anyone of locals. The governor of South Kivu province accuses some state agents of collaborating with this illegal operator to impoverish the country.
That was reporter Jaffa Al-Katanti Jaffa speaking with us from Goma, Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. In late December, Burkina Faso passed a law granting amnesty to soldiers accused of plotting a failed 2015 military coup. Analysts say current leader Ibrahim Traore, who took power in a coup himself and has since dodged several reported coup and assassination attempts, could be setting a dangerous precedent. Henry Wilkins report.
In late December, Burkina Faso passed a law granting amnesty to soldiers accused of a failed 2015 military coup against then-president Michel Kafando. The country's current military dictator, Ibrahim Traoré, who is widely understood to be behind the amnesty, has himself faced several coup attempts from within the military since he took power more than 2 years ago, according to state media reports. Beverly O'Chieng with the Washington-based Center for Strategic and International Studies, Africa Program, says the move could set a precedent for anyone wishing to oust Traoré.
It's true, Traoré's decision is risky and it might set a double standard, especially considering the fact that he himself came to power through a military coup. Even if it doesn't reduce the risk of further coup attempts or undermining of legal processes, he's able to still save face and then sustain a semblance of popularity and unity.
But why has Traoré made a move that could encourage further coup attempts? Political scientist Jeffrey Julian Kouao suggests a strategic rationale behind the amnesty. He says the experience of the pardoned coup plotters could be an asset in the country's fight against militant groups linked to Islamic State and Al-Qaeda.
Leur expertise militaire et diplomatique peut être utile.
He says their military and diplomatic expertise could be useful to the current government in their fight against terrorism. Personalities like General Gilbert Diendéré and Djibril Dessolé have great military and diplomatic experience that Ibrahim Traoré wants to exploit. General Diendéré was a prominent figure in the Burkinabe military, serving as the chief of staff of the armed forces. Basile, a former minister of foreign affairs, was also implicated in the coup attempt and was subsequently arrested and charged with treason. Ochieng suggests it could be a defensive move on the part of Traoré. She says the previous coup attempts against Traoré were likely due to tension with senior members of the military, which Traoré is seeking to calm by releasing their allies.
Burkina Faso is still politically fragile under Traoré. On one hand, the numerous allegations of attempted coups against his government might be a means of playing up threats and also exerting more power, but they're also a reflection of sustained opposition towards his leadership.
Burkina Faso has been battling a growing insurgency since 2015, with violence spreading across the country. The conflict has led to thousands of deaths, widespread displacement, and one of the world's worst humanitarian crises. Data from the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project shows terrorist violence has only gotten worse during Traoré's time in power. Henry Wilkins, VOA News.
Gunfire erupted Wednesday evening inside the presidency in Chad's capital, N'Djamena, with tanks and a heavy security presence on the streets. According to French news agency AFP reporters and security sources, several hours later, Foreign Minister Abdirahman Koulamallah appeared in a video on Facebook surrounded by soldiers, saying that the situation is completely under control. President Joe Biden on Wednesday approved a federal emergency declaration for California's wildfires that will release money and resources to battle the blazes. Attending a wildfire briefing at a Santa Monica fire station, Biden pledged that the federal government will assist the community with rebuilding, but warned that the recovery for the area will take some time. The Los Angeles County Fire Department faced four life-threatening wildfires that have killed at least two people, burned more than 1,000 buildings, and forced tens of thousands of people to evacuate. And that's it for this Thursday, January 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming aboard with us this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton, Washington, saying, have a great day, but please be safe, whatever you do.